All right, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the HPC Dev Room. Thanks for being here so early in the morning, maybe not entirely sober. We'll let Nicholas get started with opening the Dev Room with a talk on peer review. Thank you, Nicholas.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. Thanks to be here early in the morning to begin this HPC day. At first them. Big thanks to everyone who organized this room. That's really great to be here. Thanks, Kenneth, and all your team. So about me, I'm Nicolas Vuay. I'm a C++ developer, and I have the chance to make my job about making first code contributions. I'm working at Kitware Europe, and I work mainly on peer review, so developing the software, but also interacting with the community. So here's my mail if you want to reach me later. So peer review, it's an end-user application that work for scientific data analysis and visualizations. Well, we have an open community on the GitLab for the code and on Discourse for discussions. It's supported by Kitware, which is also behind VTK for Visualization Toolkit and CMake, you potentially already know about. So what do we do with peer review? It's for displaying and analyzing scientific data sets. So it's mainly a 3D visualizer, but you've got also some charts and spreadsheets and so on. It's also intended for data processing. So we have a concept of filters to take an input and compute some stuff on it and get your outputs. So to basically you can extract the data of interest of your raw data. We also have some other module like realistic rendering, so you can do your communications with directly your real data sets and not with just some kind of fake one. So here is some basic screenshot of the applications. Who is using peer review? We cover all it's generic applications, so we cover a large range of domains like fluid dynamics, so we can compute streamlines, particle tracking, and so on. We have also volume rendering that is really nice for medical applications. With you have some 3D scan and you want to understand what happened inside. So that's an infinite list. We have a lot of domains that can be covered. But yeah, here is the more well-known one. Oh, we do use peer review. So as I said, that's an application. So basically, the first way to learn is to use the GUI. So you click on buttons, you do some stuff. And you're happy. But you can also use the Python wrapping to write some scripts. And so you can run the script on batch processing without having to be behind your computer. It's also a framework because you can code your own extensions, your own derivative work from peer review in the native C++ language, but also some features can be done in Python code. And it's all based on the visualization toolkit. I mean, all the hard work of processing the data and do the rendering come from VTK. So as I say, that's also supported by Kitware. So I also work sometimes on VTK to have some bug fix or some small new features. Where we can run peer review, on which hardware is it possible to use it? Basically, on your small classical desktop, we have some official binaries you can try to download and just run. It's cross-platform, I didn't say, but you can run it on also on proprietary software like Mac or Windows, but it should be out of the box for Linux too. You can also build it. We have a large selection of build options depending on what you want to do exactly. You can enable or disable it. So if you want to have Python data distribution, parallelizations, or custom rendering, a lot of stuff. We have some documentation about it, and we can help you on the discourse if you have to trying to achieve some specific build of it. And which kind of usage do we have of peer review? So either research and industry are using it. For instance, recently there was the before winter, a supercomputing conference in the US, and they organize a service contest where people are asked to upload some nice videos they made about their scientific analysis. And most of them are using peer review, either for just the data processing, but also sometimes for the video generations and animate their data. So why all those people are using ParaView? Because ParaView does some stuff efficiently to process the data on their infrastructures. So that's what I want to talk in the next part of my talk. So what ParaView use behind the hood to make it possible. So first, we have a client-server architecture. So I already said that you can do it from GUI or from Python. Basically, the GUI and Python are just two clients. So you can do exactly the same stuff with one or the other. There's no limit, really no limitation about using one or the second. You can also run in the with remote server, so and you can run in a distributed environment your server. So in that case, you can connect your you can either just run the server part to analysis with a script analysis, but you can also connect your local client to your distant server, and again using the graphical interface to do the stuff as if it was on your local machine, but instead it's the supercomputer or the remote architecture. At the bottom are two other modes that are available. If you have some graphic nodes on your server, you can use them for just the rendering part and stay the data management on the CPU nodes, and still you can connect your client on it to see what happened and to control from a graphical interface. And last mode, I will go back on it later. We have an in-situ infrastructure, so basically your simulation can call an API that flowed ParaView script analysis, and you can even connect with a graphical client to see time step per time step what is happened on your simulation. So that's for the different mode of use for ParaView. So first, to run on HPC infrastructure, we implement data distributions for the analysis. So basically, we rely on the MPI standards. So our readers are MPI aware, so they can distribute the data over the rank early in the process when you read your data on the disk. Then most of filters are okay to run just with their subparts of data, but some other filters need to know about the neighborhood to execute correctly. So for that, we support the concept of ghost cells, where each rank know a little bit about the rank that is next to it. As in that case, mainly we split the data geometrically, so a subset is really a geometric subset of your data, and different one can know and communicate with the other for specific tasks. And at least we have some filters. So what I call a filter is really something that the user can instantiate from the client and ask to process. So we can ensure load balancing by redistributing the data during the process. The visualizations can also be distributed over several ranks. So for that, we use an inner library that's called IST that's also based on the MPI process to do that. And ParaView supports also different kind of mode of rendering. So you can, if you have dedicated rendering node, you can, as I said, create a ParaView server just for the rendering part and connect it to the data server. You can have multiple GPUs per rank, multiple GPUs per rank to do the rendering, but that's also possible locally. If you have just one machine that has multiple GPUs, you can ask to do a rendering on both simultaneously. Concerning the performances, now, so that distributions is not about performance; it's just about running with too big data, so you cannot just run on your local machine. That's a requirement when you have huge data to be able to run, to distribute it or over your computer or your supercomputer. Now we're talking a little bit about performance, because if you have big data, you also need to be performant on how you are analyze it and how you are proceed with it. So for that, we have a thin layer for CPU parallelism. We call that SMP tools in our code base. The goal is to paralyze, do code parallelizations for manifold loop. And main purpose is that you can choose at build time and then at runtime if you enable the OpenMP or TBB backends. And if you don't want external lib, you can also use the C++ thread to do that. And so, as it's just, for instance, to parallelize a for loop or fill operations, it's really widely used in a lot of our algorithm. And you have some environment variable that can control the backend on some of number of thread, the size of the thread pools, or if you allow nested pools, or so on, depending on the on your resources on backend. So it has some documentation on it, and we made some improvement last year about that. Still about performances, we also use as an optional dependency the VTKM project. That's a stand for some mini core that is intended to be used on heterogeneous systems. So basically, when you want to have performance on supercomputer or even, you still need to be aware of the current technology and the state of the art. And as we saw in the past decades, a lot of new architectures emerging. We think about using a dedicated library to be able to use these new architectures. So with VTKM, the goal inside VTKM library, the goal is to split all operations into really atomic operations, and then the at runtime it can dispatch all that on the hardware you find on the backends that are available. So with VTKM, you can use CUDA, OpenMP, TBB also to do the computation. This time with VTKM is not just accelerated some specific loop inside an algorithm, it's more about VTKM is re-implementing some wool algorithm like extracting ISO control or also. And then we embed this into ParaView with some kind of wrapper to communicate with how VTKM works. So that's optional, so that's enabled by default in the binaries we provide. Another point about performance, but that's really depending on the use case, on the data you are using, is the in-situ wall. So basically, when you have your simulation, it dumps every time step or every n time step some data on the disk. And then to analyze, you have to load back to the data with post-processing tools. But that at a cost of writing and reading from your disk. And you should have the size on your disk, the whole size of the disk, so you should have big disk. And then it have really a cost in terms of time when you should write a full mesh or full data on disk and then read back with another process. So basically the goal of in-situ is to make the simulation communicate directly with the processing tools, and then the processing tools can wrap the memory in place and analyze directly in the RAM without writing on the disk to save some I/O time. So in the context of ParaView, we have a standalone API that's called Catalyst that was recently released. Also, we make big improvements into Catalyst past years. And the goal of Catalyst is to have a really minimal API and a stable ABI, so you can choose at runtime the implementation you want. And one other goal is to minimize the instrumentation you need to do in your simulation code directly, so it's really easy for simulation developer to understand the few key places where they have to put a new code to call our API. So here is a really basic example from one on the tutorial we have. You need to initialize, of course, and you need to call some method at each time step where you want the proceeding to happen. And finalizations. Of course, the you still have to do a little layer to describe your data. For that, we do some third-party library to help us. So ParView, so Catalyst is a standalone. It is not is independent project, independent of ParView. But of course, the first real implementation is an implementation for ParView. So we implement Catalyst. So the backend, you can run ParView pipeline directly from your simulation. It's each time step or when you call it. So how does it work? How do you can, the idea is that you hardcode the communication between your simulation and Catalyst through the API, but then the actual script that is executed, the actual pipeline and visualization you want to produce, it's all scriptable thanks to the Python wrapping of ParView. You can load some representative data in the graphical interface of ParView, do some analysis, export this as a Python script, and use this script to feed Catalyst. And then when you run your simulation with Catalyst enabled, it will reuse the script you produce directly from the GUI. So people that are not at all developers still can do some stuff with Catalyst. And last point is that when you have a running simulation with the Catalyst pipeline on your dedicated server, you also can use the GUI to connect to this ParView server and to see real-time, get some screenshots of the visualization on the analysis that is proceeding on the server. So you can have a feedback, a time step per time step on what happened on the simulation. So if you see that something is diverging or going wrong, you can stop your simulation directly and you don't waste all the time before seeing that something went wrong and that you should tweak a parameter and start again. So I was quite faster than expected for me. So in the conclusions of to be able to run efficiently on supercomputer with ParView, we implemented a client-server mode. The server can be is MPIO aware and can be run on distributed environments. We are relying on old and well-known libraries such as implementation of MPI to do the distributions, but we are also really looking toward new library that can help us. And we are able to integrate new library to do some performance analysis on new library that is aware of a new architecture of supercomputer or new technology. That's the case with, for instance, with VTK AIM or others. And we have this API to do in situ that can save a lot of time and disk space. Yeah, just a slide to summarize the how it's organized. So we have different kind of way to interact with ParView, the GUI, the Python scripting, the Catalyst in situ stuff. You can also build some custom one. We have some web example of clients. And at the bottom, we have a non-finite list of library on which we rely to do the effective work. So basically, OpenGL, MPI, OpenMP, and so. Concerning roadmap, we have several improvements that are coming. First, I talk about in situ, in the current implementation, you have each rank that does the simulation does also the co-processing work. So that's not always what is intended. Sometimes you want to do the co-processing on the other rank. Just because, for instance, you have dedicated rank for visualization, so you want to do all the processing on the visualization nodes. That's for not possible just with the in-situ implementation, but we have an in-transit implementation where the simulation can communicate with those different nodes, and the analysis can happen on other ranks than the simulation, so the simulation can go forward directly. We also use some new library, recently used a library called DIY that's here to do some wrapper. For us, we take it as a wrapper around the MPI, so DIY allows to do some, to cut the data into different blocks, and then the at runtime DIY itself is aware to do, okay, I should put 3 blocks on each rung or only 1 block, and it's just a new abstraction over cutting your data for distribution. We are also looking for better VTK on always better VTK integrations to be able to run on a lot of hardware. And something really cool that is really new, it's just in the development branch of VTK, so absolutely not in Paraview yet. That was merged, I think, 1 or 2 weeks ago. It's what we call implicit arrays, and basically it's really cool for memory point of view, because it's some kind of views on memory. For now, in the Paraview process, your data is really an array in the memory, in your memory. So with the implicit array, we have some views, so you can implement your own pattern on it. For instance, when you do an ISO control of your data, you know that the resulting data will all have the same values. So if you after the ISO control you still have 1 million points, you will know that all the points will share the same value. For now, it's 1 million times duplicate in your memory. So that's not efficient. With implicit array, you can store only one time the value and say, okay, this should be an array of size 1 million, and the value you should return is this one. But you can imagine as though have a compressed array in your memory and have an on-the-fly uncompressed algorithm when you want to read your data. So it has a cost in terms of time of computations, but if you run out of memory with too huge data, that can be really great. Okay. I still can have a lot of things to say, but that was the end of what I put in the slide. So thanks for attending. Thanks to be here early in the morning. And if you have any questions, I think it will be the time. I put just a lot of resources at the end of the slide, so you can get it from the website of the Fosun. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you very much, Nicholas. Do we have any questions?
Thank you. In our group, we are happy users of Paraview. One thing that maybe I could add to a wish list or some, maybe just for discussion, is that we have quite some headache when using Paraview on GitHub Actions. For multiple platforms, so like to set up environments for Linux, Mac, and Windows with the same version of Paraview, coupling with Python, just to be ready to use it. It's a bit of a headache, especially when you go to Windows and you need to download things, brew things, apt-get install things, and then they not necessarily work all together. So wish list thing, GitHub Actions, Paraview setup thing. Unless it doesn't, it exists already, but I haven't found it.
And the two to get is the questions here.
The use of Paraview in GitHub Actions, so in like a continuous integration,
yes,
limited environment, I guess.
It's a wish list.
It's a wish list. Yeah. Like
yeah. Well, we don't choose GitHub directly. We have the GitLab, where you can find a lot of stuff. We have our CI and CD. We produce nightly releases of Paraview through the GitLab. And I don't know if it's answer part of the question, but.
So, what kind of stuff are you doing with Paraview in GitHub Actions? Is it rendering or?
Python. The fact is, I don't really know about GitHub Actions because I don't use GitHub anymore. So. I don't see what you can do with that you should not able to do otherwise. So,
any other questions? There's a question
just
on the chat.
On the right. Okay.
Yeah, there's a question on the chat. If I want to put Catalyst in my simulation, what is the first step?
Oh, sorry. If you want to use Catalyst?
In your,
What's the first step? We have some, I think we have some tutorials on example in the code base of ParaView. We have some examples where there are some dummy simulations with just a main, so you can infer from it to see how it is organized. And yeah, the first, one first thing is to be able to know what do you want, which data do you want to send through through Catalyst, and where you can access it in your code, and then it, and then so you at this time you have located the entry points from your simulation code, and then you will be able to start writing the small wrapper you need to wrap your data intended to the actual API of ParaView. Thanks.
Okay. Any other burning questions? Maybe one last. Yeah. Last question.
Thank you for the talk. A very naive question. Is it working? A very naive question because I know almost nothing about ParaView. You had many components there. One of them was the client that does the visualizations.
Yeah.
Would it be possible at some point in the future to create like a web client just log into the website and it just displays everything? Or is it just due to the architecture, is it like super complicated to do it that way?
The question is, yeah. The question is, are we able to use a web client for ParaView?
For the client, just for the part that does the visualization,
We have some web client for ParaView already. So we have a framework called Trame, T-A-R-M-E, that's intended to connect to a ParaView server, and then you build your own front end for this application. So basically, it's we don't have a. Yeah, you should build your own, but it can be okay. I have a server on. I open always this data, and the front end is just a 3D render view. That's already possible quite easily, I think, with the Trame framework.
And Jupyter Notebooks also supported, right? Jupyter Notebooks, I think I saw it on the user interface line.
Well, as we use intensively Python, we also. Make the step to be supported from a Jupyter notebook, and we also have a plugin that allows you to control a ParaView GUI, so you can do some stuff in the notebook, and if something goes wrong or you don't understand, you can launch a magic command, run ParaView, that's open the ParaView client with all your current pipeline, and you can introspect in the GUI, and then you can go back to your notebook.
Okay, thank you very much, Nicholas.
Thanks.